Forging links between civil society actors, citizens, NGOs, and those representative bodies is a fundamental part of how popular sovereignty is upheld. We need to support any organization that is wanting to sort of channel the needs and concerns into public policy processes.
Welcome to the Conversations with Democracy podcast, where we uncover the successes and challenges of initiatives underway to build democracies in Africa. My name is Liz Letabele, and this podcast is brought to you by Democracy Works Foundation. Join us to find out about our work with our partners to build inclusive, equitable, and sustainable consensus democracy. In other words, democracies that work. This podcast series spotlights the work of a project that seeks to build bridges between local civil society and provincial legislatures. Today, we speak to Victoria Hassan from the Westminster Foundation for Democracy, an organization working to strengthen parliaments and political parties around the globe. Westminster Foundation for Democracy partners with Democracy Works Foundation in the Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislature Project, or CSPPL for short. In this episode, Victoria Hassan and Mira Dutschke, South Africa Program Manager at Democracy Works Foundation, explore some of the successes and challenges experienced throughout the project and take a closer look at some of the unlikely opportunities that the COVID-related lockdown provided in spearheading digital public participation. Victoria Hassan is Senior Parliamentary Advisor at Westminster Foundation for Democracy. She has played an advisory role throughout the project.
Can you tell us a bit more about the work of the Westminster Foundation and your role?
Well, the Westminster Foundation for Democracy is set up to strengthen parliaments and political parties globally. We have country offices in 27 countries. We have programs running in Africa, Asia, Central and Eastern Europe, the Middle East and Northern Africa. We sort of spread our thematic focus in all areas of inclusion, legislative strengthening, civil society engagement work, massive advocates of gender equality and human rights. I'm the Senior Parliamentary Advisor at the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. My core focus is on institutional strengthening, but I also do advisory work on virtual parliaments, parliamentary innovations, deliberative democracy, getting increasingly interested in looking at qualities of leadership, decentralization, and post-conflict resolution.
Thank you so much. Can you talk to us a bit about the involvement of the Westminster Foundation or your role in particular in the civil society participation in provincial legislature program?
I just so desperately believed in the idea of trying to bring together CSOs and provincial parliaments as a sort of decentralized sort of way to support national parliamentary strengthening as well. Honoured to be able to provide offhand advisory support when needed. And I was lucky enough before the pandemic to actually come to see the project in action three times. So I have participated in some of the training, in-person training, and then virtually was able to participate in several of those when the pandemic hit. So that's really been my heart level and technical level role in the program.
Democracy Works Foundation and Westminster Foundation for Democracy have been working together on the project, with the Westminster Foundation believing there are significant benefits to enhanced public engagement between public officials and civil society.
forging links between civil society actors, citizens, NGOs, and those representative bodies is a fundamental part of how popular sovereignty is upheld. We need to support any organization that is wanting to sort of channel the needs and concerns into public policy processes. I think that the main sort of crux of this question and our concern as a foundation is the role of Parliament in that, especially in really weak states. Parliaments can quite often get bypassed and ignored because they see it's just another sort of thing to do. Why not just go straight to the ministry or government to plead with them to hear their needs and demands? But Parliament is really there for those organisations and those citizens. So quite often it is this action of two-way awareness to let civil society organisations know the role that Parliament plays, and they can sort of leverage that voice even quicker than they can if they go directly to the government themselves. So I guess sort of we're always sort of playing this role of showing civil society organisations the power of Parliament to vocalise their message, as well as showing Parliaments the power of civil society organisations in giving them information and building up awareness of what needs to be done and the action that needs to be taken.
Thank you. You were speaking earlier about how you had been in South Africa to see the project firsthand, and we had actually initially planned for you to visit South Africa in person just as COVID pandemic, you know, hit the world. So that changed the nature of our engagements, in particular in the Northern Cape, quite drastically. Can you share with us a bit what happened in the Northern Cape?
It was obviously extremely disappointing not to be able to visit and get a sort of first-hand impression of practices and procedures, which I just think is a sort of foundation for any programme like this, to get a sense of who the people are and how they sort of experience their political life world. So it did originally sort of present a challenge, and we had to think long and hard about how to redesign engagement in such a way where I still could feel like I was getting a sense of their life world in order to be able to think through strategic advice on how to actually establish the relationship with civil society organisations. You know, if I can't see them in their own context and life world and how it's going, how am I going to fill in that gaps virtually? So originally there was an analysis and sort of step back, and it wasn't clear that we would be able to garner the interest for the MPLs to attend virtual sessions. And then it certainly wasn't clear how I was going to generate that same level of connection with individuals to get them to start sharing their practices and perspectives as openly through a virtual platform. If we get them online, then we may even get them more captivated than for a 2 or 3 day training session, where there is always a little bit of disruption with phone calls and leaving the room. And got quite excited because if it went well, it was probably then going to be a blueprint for future program work. And it felt quite pioneering. And I liked the idea that we weren't going to give up. We were going to sort of take this opportunity that we had through Carmen at the legislature to access these individuals. And then selfishly, as somebody who really does miss that sort of connection point in politics in South Africa, the idea of being able to get it from my living room in Amsterdam made me feel really happy, particularly in the course of our pandemic. But we started to schedule a series of one-on-one sessions with them, which then brightened every sort of third week of the pandemic, having these virtual interactions with MPLs. And there was always a handful of participants. And so that shift, I think, went really well and far better than I expected in terms of that sort of engagement and connection that I don't think was lost at all, even though it was virtual and meeting virtually as strangers.
I remember you saying that there was a level of intimacy in these sessions that would have been difficult to actually recreate in a face-to-face setting. Tell me a bit more about that.
We managed to cultivate a sense of intimacy. Now, I find that one of the most thought-provoking sort of conclusions from sort of the methodology and approach, because I typically like to spend quite a bit of time warming up with individuals in a training session, sort of getting to know each other, sort of feel and flow, which is done sort of in person, full body, voice, height, sound, and all of that concern fell away. They were in my home and I was in their home, and I kicked it off by sharing my career, my journey, who I was, in the hope that they would sort of feel my sincerity and sincere concern about their life world and context. And I think that sort of broke down barriers. They shared the challenges they were feeling through this pandemic, and we just started and ended most sessions with a check-in like that, just as humans. And that's where I think the intimacy came. It was repeated, it was real, and there was no sort of performance around sort of speeches, standing up, exercises, sort of all of the lovely tips and tricks that we do if we're running learning experiences in person. They all had to fall away. Nobody was sort of strangleholding them to do this. They didn't have to, even if it was in the program, especially when they were out in the field. And yet we did have individuals who were using their phone data, driving about or stopping to actually get onto the call. But I think that is something that I will take away as perhaps sort of giving a looser model to these learning might surprise you in the amount of participation, whereas if you stranglehold people, then they might automatically try to wriggle out a bit. But with the loose framework, we still got high degrees of participation, which I thought was fantastic.
What are these training sessions designed to do? What are they meant to help members of parliament or provincial legislatures to achieve?
I think we really wanted to try and forge relationships between the members of the provincial legislature and certain sections of the civil society in that province, sort of thematically related to sort of security and health issues. It comes from the goal of trying to get certain civil society organisations to understand the role of a provincial legislature and an MPL. But I think we really did have to shift our expectations to not forget those grand objectives, but also accept that in a virtual world, when also the provincial government's grappling with the COVID outbreak, that perhaps we had to take five steps back and make the sort of immediate goal to forge a working relationship with this provincial legislature. And then I really wanted to understand what their life world looked like, so that then I can then have a conversation around how to incorporate more connection points with civil society organisations. I think we held about three or four sessions in which we were just really exploring where they were at and how they were doing in terms of doing their parliamentary role in a pandemic, what it looked like, and really delving into the challenges of CSO relations. And then after that, we tried to sort of go towards the end goal of building that relationship up with the civil society organisations, and then reflecting on what procedures, practices could be established to enable that. I think the pathway became quite clear in terms of, you know, what they could do and how they could go about doing it.
It was actually very interesting, because prior to the training, a lot of MPLs were actually not feeling very comfortable in using MS Teams or using digital platforms to engage with people, simply because they never had to in the past. People started using digital platforms to reach out much more, including to civil society partners. I mean, they developed a WhatsApp group where they shared the program. Then there was also CSO partners were also invited, you know, to the provincial legislature to make submissions. They had the virtual women's parliament. They had a whole training of CSOs that was virtual and hybrid. And for the first time in the history of the Northern Cape provincial legislature, they had a live streaming on YouTube of one of their open house sittings, which they shared the link on Facebook, and that was shared over the WhatsApp group, and was spread through a coalition of CSOs that have been growing since these initiatives. So what were some of the biggest highlights for you from this experience?
I realized that every single participant on that program cared deeply about being able to do their job as effectively as possible, but also about the challenges. They shared the challenge they have for citizens to understand what they do, where the boundaries of their role lie in terms of being able to help them. And they were just sort of sharing the challenge of, well, you know, not really being understood for their role, but being looked to and turned to solve everything. And then they also shared quite sincerely the challenge of being able to connect with civil society organizations, because civil society organizations, you know, quite often just try to go straight to government to get something done, bypassing them completely. And I think that was, you know, a really important insight that the civil society organizations got, they weren't aware of at all. So I think that was a very important and powerful moment when we made that link between the two sectors. And that, I think, is the sort of the pathway for future work, is actually getting to the nuts and bolts of that decentralized parliamentary participation framework. And luckily, they have in common a strong champion. But it will take, I think, some administrative resource, and it will take some technical resource. Or maybe this opportunity is good for sort of getting heads down and creating an alternative model for delivering this public participation framework in the province, and maybe pioneering a new framework. It might be time for provinces to start pioneering a different set of structures and models to see now, in light of having tried to implement this. So we need to either create more reporting channels, formal and informal, have budgets for this scrutinised more intricately by certain committees, maybe the PAC of the legislature. And I think these are all very positive steps that came out of it, and concrete steps that, for me, showed or demonstrated the degree of investment that these MPLs all had from all sides in actually making this work.
The project works in three provinces. What do you think were the key ingredients that allowed us to have these engagements in the Northern Cape?
Like I said, the MPLs from different parties all shared this common interest in trying to make representation work in the province, trying to get governance structures to function properly, and to the local government to deliver. Like, that was just a shared end goal. So it has actually taught me quite a lot about entry points into volatile context, and I just considered all three provinces as volatile contexts in which to program, which, you know, made it a highly rewarding opportunity if you can get it right. And then I think there is something, sorry, to be said about communication. I found to be a lot more open than we'd prepared for. We prepared for tackling difficult conversations with sensitivity between political sides and between the political staff and the administrative support staff. We had anticipated sort of manoeuvring around the sensitive issue of who's to blame or who potentially might need to change their role. And I found that communication to be a lot more open and transparent than we had anticipated. So that was, I think, a key ingredient, the fact that they actually evidently openly communicate pre this program with each other.
I want to mention the speaker. I also wanted to, you know, of course, raise the public participation and communications team, which we have interviewed the manager of in another podcast. How important are those individuals in gaining access and access points? And what can we take from this as we try and navigate other political environments?
The role of the speaker in this particular program was, I think, pretty fundamental in terms of garnering open communication on the challenges related, mostly the challenges related to CSO engagement. And the speaker not only participated in almost every single meeting, but she was deeply moved, I think, by some of the testimonies that we heard from the civil society organisations. And her leadership on this, I think, did allow the other members to speak quite openly too about their challenges. So there is a lesson in there about sort of the what can be gained when you do get a senior sort of parliamentary leader involved. Do you know, the opposite can quite often be true, where their participation almost stymies debate and makes it very difficult for those underneath a leadership figure to share openly. But in this instance, it wasn't a barrier, so it could have gone either way. It just so happened to be that this particular speaker, I think, was moved to share her thoughts and also communicate quite sincerely about the challenges that the province is facing and that the parliament is facing, and but also to confirm what we genuinely got from this programme, which was their sincere interest in actually reforging a relationship or pathway to having a better relationship with civil society organisations, but also this sense of camaraderie. Actually, they had just hosted a youth parliament over the course of our programming that reminded, even during the course of the pandemic, them of just how vital a role young South Africans have to play, or could play, potentially play, in reinvigorating representative processes, and how powerful it was to them to have sort of got the radio waves and the provincial sort of broadcasting waves focused on that challenge, and gave them as a parliament sort of a sense of place in talking about that as a legislature that had obviously invested, as they all do, in marking that moment through the ceremony of a youth parliament. But on this occasion, the speaker's description of the power of sectoral parliaments and the sincere sort of motivations on the part of the MPLs as a consequence of it towards trying to help the youth through this pandemic in their province, help them to better engage and to be more on the side of the next generation of South Africa, I sensed a real opportunity in future programming and future work in the province. And it made me reflect a little bit on this question afterwards, in creating a CSO day, another sectoral parliament. I do think marking the moment in that way may be a good step forward, because it seems as though through ceremony, connections are forged, because every single member of the legislature that participated felt good about the work that was undertaken. And so perhaps creating some sort of a ceremony around the calls for forging CSO relations might help get it on the agenda. So her participation was vital, but also she showed the power of ceremony in bringing people together.
That's great, thank you. And it's like I said, they did actually, following the training, invite CSOs and a CSO coalition to come to Parliament. It wasn't quite with the ceremony of the Women's Parliament, but it was in that spirit. And the CSO network has grown beyond CISPL NGOs. Much wider in the Northern Cape. So I think that's also great for potential for sustainability of this project, is that these relationships actually are organically developing by themselves. Why do you think projects like this are important?
So projects that focus on forging the relationship between CSOs and parliaments are actually vital in essentially promoting the work of a legislature, particularly in contexts where it is volatile, people aren't doing so great. It's in those contexts and situations where the role of a parliament is quite often overlooked, because the people are in survival mode. They just want to get things done. And that's not good for the long-term stability and health of a democracy. So it's at that moment where you have to be even smarter, quicker, clearer, that we need to showcase a parliament's power and authority so that the democratic process is sustained through that period of volatility and challenge. So there is something about volatile context really needing to nurture the relationship between parliament and civil society, and also to make sure that the power of the executive is held in check in such contexts. Because obviously when things aren't going well, there is a tendency for governments to try to sort of obviously hide from the fact that things aren't going well, not sort of be called to account, and to just sort of say, use the excuse, no, I'm focused on delivering, like, I haven't got time for this. And it's at that point that we really need parliaments to step up and to get governments to spend some of their time, energy and resources in answering questions, being open and transparent as to how it's going and or why it's not going, and not just on the doing itself. And so these types of programs are particularly important in countries like South Africa and at provincial level, where also the levels of education and awareness around the intricacies of governance processes, even representative processes, are not well understood. And in the end, these provincial legislatures are vital to the constitutional makeup and of South Africa. So they have a role to play. They are given money to play that role, and forging that relationship is one sort of sure way to promote the legitimacy of that and the realization of that particular role.
The civil society participation in provincial legislature project was made possible with the co-funding and technical assistance from the European Union and the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. Please follow our channel for more Conversations with Democracy. This is Liz Letabele signing out.